From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Montague Street.
Berkeley.
Hercules, California.
Bible Park City College.
South San Francisco.
Downtown.
ATL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Oakland.
Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll hear your stories from both sides of the Bay.
Oakland is fun and vibrant. It is like a chameleon.
I used to think, you know, San Francisco is America, and then people say, no, San Francisco is San Francisco.
Then we'll head out into San Francisco and try to figure out whether and when graffiti becomes art.
Because we asked for it, and they put it there, feels like we own it.
Graffiti vandalism is graffiti vandalism. It doesn't matter if it's a Rembrandt. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's Picasso. If it's illegal, then it's illegal.
Join us out on the street today on Cross Currents. In the Bay Area, there are countless stories all happening at the same time.
My name is Visalia Stanley.
My name is Van Turrentine.
My name is Xiaojuan Shu.
My name's Thomas Reeve.
Well, my name is Ramona Nunez.
I use a name. It's Star Love. And yes, like Twinkle Twinkle Star, but with two R's.
Those are just some of the people we've interviewed through our new community storytelling initiative. It's called Hear Here, a pop-up radio project. We're spending a year on the ground in two Bay Area cities, Oakland and San Francisco, asking you to share your stories with us on air and online. Today, we're kicking off a week of Hear Here by sharing some of the best stories the project has gathered so far. And here to give us a sneak peek are the producers Audrey Dilling and Erica Moo.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, Holly.
So you were out yesterday at Sunday Streets with your new, with a lot of cardboard and some paint. And tell us about yesterday. What were you doing?
Well, it was a gorgeous day yesterday in the Dog Patch neighborhood. Sunday Streets is when they block off the streets to vehicles so pedestrians and cyclists can own the streets. And what we were doing was...
We were launching our new sort of mobile storytelling, story sharing installation, which we're calling a story tunnel.
Okay, give us a picture of this story tunnel.
So it starts as about a 3-foot-tall pile of industrial strength cardboard. It's these giant letters that fit together in such a way that it creates a tunnel, a three-dimensional tunnel that people can walk through that spells out the name of our project. It's kind of like IKEA meets Sesame Street, the way it all sets up. And it spells out Hear, Here. And on the inside, we're posting photos of people that we've interviewed with a link to stories that people can listen to. So you can walk through and actually experience the project.
And on the back of these letters is chalkboard paint. So we write in a question and have people interact with the question and leave their answers. In addition to the story tunnel is a little recording booth where we are actually interviewing members of the community wherever we're popping up with this giant installation.
So you've got this big installation so that people can walk through. And what's the purpose of all this? What's it for?
Right. So, I mean, the whole point is to get people to listen to each other. We sort of think that getting people to listen to each other is an integral way of building community. And that's what this project is about. It's a community storytelling and building project.
Part of KALW's new initiative to try and be out in community. And what's part of the philosophy behind Hear, Hear, Erica?
Sure. So the idea is that basically the stories of ordinary people are worthy of being heard. Oftentimes, reporters need a news hook in order to talk to anybody, and we want to sort of switch that up and change things around. So we've been in all sorts of neighborhoods in San Francisco and Oakland, which are our two focus cities. Yesterday, we were in the Dog Patch. This Thursday, we're going to be in Visitation Valley at the Public Library. And the week before, we were in East Oakland at 81st Avenue Library.
And what kind of stories are people telling you? What are you hearing?
We're hearing all kinds of stories. We were talking to people about work to start out. So we heard stories from people about going through retirement, stories of people trying to start out in their careers. Now we're talking about to people about food, and we've gotten some interesting stories. Erica heard a good one yesterday.
So basically, I met a woman who lives in San Francisco, and she found out that her grandparents opened a bakery in the Mission District in the 1920s. And so she had no idea that her roots ran that deep in this city. And she is currently doing research to find out more.
So can we hear one of these stories?
Yeah, we can hear one of the stories of one of the first people that we spoke to at the Golden Gate Library in Oakland when we were first starting out this project. This young man's name is Greg G, and he wanted to share his story. And this is what he told us.
My name is Gregory G, and
Hip-hop was my first love. My sister was playing it in her room. It was called I Get Around. When it came on, it was just like, I thought it was like some piano joint because it starts off as a piano. And then it just drops and I was like, whoa, what is this? They had all types of different sounds and stuff like that. And my sister started dancing to it. Still climbing the underground when we come around. And once I really like got into it and heard it and constantly hearing it, it was just in my head. It was like, I can do this. To get wrecked, all respect to those who broke their neck to keep warriors in check at what they sweat. I'm out here rapping on Shattuck, just like Shattuck downtown. What downtown Berkeley is called the square, we call it the bricks. And I'm going to slow it down because I do it kind of fast. I want you to make sure you know everything I'm saying. I say, in a world of creativity, psychic, kinetic energy, mind corrupted by chaos, but soul searching for inner peace. And I was down there just freestyling. Some of my friends and his brother named Lloyd Edwards came up, heard what I was spitting. What you are witnessing, superior art abilities that shouldn't be around for about another century. He kind of heard it and got enthralled and got motivated by what I was saying, actually moved in and kind of pulled me to the side, gave me his number, and he said, if I'm down, hit him. And like I had this urge and I just hit him up. He wanted me to meet him at his place and he said he had opportunity for me if I was ready. I come over to his place. I meet a couple other producers. He said he heard me on the blog. He said, spit something that you had recently rapped about or something. My Sharia Moore has the side of Stevie Wonder, blinded by hypocrites, speaking on gibberish, lies come in limitless, but the truth is significant. And they were all like, whoa, this guy's for real. You know, they might have thought I was on some kid stuff or whatever, some low-grade type material. For some reason, I thought it was big. I thought this guy, you know, could open a lot of doors. And he didn't, in fact, do that in the end, but what he opened my doors, me personally. And that meant a lot. That he helped me get out of the shadows of what I wanted to do and illuminate myself in the light and be able to actually able to realize what I can actually do. And I think that's important for everybody to experience. Living low now on top of the globe, this is the life. I don't just want to live on my own. We all living it. So stop giving in. This is the knowledge and not never just deliverance.
That was Greg G, and he spoke with Audrey Dilling, and Audrey is here with me talking about the Hear Hear pop-up radio project, along with Erica Moo, the producers of this project. So is that story typical of a Hear Hear story?
It's really hard to say. I mean, we've talked to about 75 people so far in these two cities, and they have been principals, they've been students, they've been retirees, former drug addicts, and community activists. So it's been a wide range of people, and we're looking to flesh out that picture of these two cities because it's very diverse in the Bay Area.
And we want to get people to hear each other's stories. So one thing that we've started doing at our interviews is playing stories for people so they can listen to what somebody before them has said, probably in a different city, and respond to that. And then we will record that response and share it with the person who told that story so we can really get people talking to each other and listening.
So if I'm somebody who wants to share my story, what do I do?
So basically, I would say the first thing you should do is visit our website, which is hearhear.kalw.org. And what you can do is find our events page and find out where we're popping up next. A great way to do that as well is follow us on Twitter. We're HearHear Radio. And what you can do also is email us at hearhearradio@gmail.com to schedule a time for us to interview you.
And Audrey and Erica will be at the Visitation Public Library this coming Thursday, so you can meet them in person and tell your story there, or you can go to the website.
That's hearhear.kalw.org. If you can't meet us in person, click on the Participate link, and you'll find a tool where you can record your story from the comfort of your own home.
That's Erica Moo and Audrey Dilling. They are the producers of Hear Hear, a pop-up radio project, which is part of a national initiative of AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. It's designed to bring new journalistic and technical ingenuity to extending public media service to more Americans. It's supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Wincote Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. You can tune in this entire week during Cross Currents to hear more from Hear Hear. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Many of San Francisco's stories are painted on its walls. There are beautiful murals like the ones in the Mission's Clarion Alley, and then there are names and words just scrawled on city buses, what we call graffiti. And there's a lot in between. It all depends on what you consider art. KLW's Lupe Hernandez gives us this tour.
As you go from place to place in San Francisco, in neighborhoods like downtown and the Haight and along Market Street, all around you'll see graffiti. Some of it may be giant, complex drawings that cover entire walls. Other graffiti might be scrawled all over the bus you're riding. Or it might just be simple bubble letters filled in with color behind a billboard high above you. In San Francisco and many major cities, there is a never-ending public controversy over graffiti. People think one of two things. Either the graffiti is vandalism or it's art. When I walk through my neighborhood, I don't see much graffiti. But what there is stands out. Lakeview is a working class and mostly quiet neighborhood in the southern part of San Francisco. Right next to the local elementary school and park, there's a corner store called Nora's Market. Usually, when I walk by, I don't expect to see anything on the old green wall. Just peeling paint. But one day, I see layers of spray-painted trees covering the side of the store. The style they're drawn in makes it obvious that the writer Plant Trees made the piece. He's an experienced graffiti artist whose work is all over the city. His character, that's like a signature, is a pine tree. The trees are cartoonish, and the entire wall looks abstract. Mike Obushi owns Nora's Market. When I ask him about the graffiti, he says,
"That's not graffiti, that's a nice picture of the trees."
Obushi tells me he likes having art on the outside wall, in part because it keeps other graffiti away. He actually allowed Plant Trees to make the piece.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than scribbles. This is it's like a forest. There's nice trees, you know, and it makes it look nice for the neighborhood.
I leave the market and take the bus to Geneva and Mission. From the back seat, I see some tags that look more like scribbles than art.
A lot of them aren't very decorated. They're not really good looking. There's one that has an attempt with clouds around it, or in a cloud. There's another one that I can't even tell what one of the letters are. Like, it's really bad.
About 2 miles down Mission is a small bakery called Rosita's. The sidewall is covered by a mural. Roses and a cake with the bakery's name. I walk in to ask about it and meet Marco Bertolazzi, the owner's grandson.
It's really an art, really what it is. It should be in galleries. It could be in galleries.
Bertolazzi used to be a tagger. That's someone who may quickly write their nickname on a street sign, but probably won't make a mural. And he says there's a difference between the kind of art on the wall of the bakery and what Mike Obushi calls scribbles.
There's rules to graffiti, and there's things you should and shouldn't do, things you're supposed to tag on, things you're not supposed to. It's not meant to go destroy the neighborhoods. It's not. It's to make the neighborhoods look good.
But unauthorized graffiti is still illegal.
Graffiti vandalism is graffiti vandalism. It doesn't matter if it's a Rembrandt.
Martin Ferreira is a graffiti abatement officer with the San Francisco Police Department. He says it's his job to be a graffiti expert and to know who's writing what. But that doesn't mean critiquing work.
I'm not the art police. If they have permission to do it, then I'm not going to get involved.
Ferreira says illegal taggers cost the city about $30 million a year. So when he looks at graffiti, he doesn't make a lot of distinctions. All of it could be vandalism, and everyone that does it could be a vandal.
You can't just go to a property and change it the way you see fit.
In the graffiti community, there are different labels to describe different types of work. Writers are more professional. They do at times have permission and benefit the underground culture by creating work that people are happy to have. Taggers, on the other hand, seem to have just started out and are not as interested in improving their work. Marco Bertolazzi, being a former tagger himself, says that's bad for everyone.
I mean, yeah, some kids, you know, they go out there, they do the little tags on the buses, on all the signs and everything like that. That's what's destroying graffiti. That's not graffiti. That's tagging.
Breaking the rules is always fun. When taggers really start to get into it, maybe with a crew, they make a name for themselves. they start getting bigger around the city, and they never want to stop. But after a certain point, it doesn't really get them anywhere. If there's no improvement, no one will ever admire their work. They'll just be well-known vandals. And this is where Bertolazzi and Pereira agree.
It's costing the city money. That's money that could be better spent for other things, for education, for public safety. But we have to invest in our city, and we have to make sure that it looks beautiful. Otherwise, we're not going to have things like mural projects or funding for arts.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to get rid of graffiti when so much of it adds so much beauty to the city. But tagging illegally gets in the way of positive graffiti, and it keeps real artists from doing their work. For Cross Currents, I'm Lupe Hernandez.
Lupe Hernandez is a student at Burton High School in San Francisco. She's spending the summer reporting for KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. It's not just businesses trying to give graffiti artists a legal public canvas. Some private homeowners are doing that, too. KALW's Leela Day spoke with a Bernal Heights couple that hired an artist to come tag their house.
Amanda and Nathan Kirby live on a quiet, tree-lined street in the Bernal Heights neighborhood of San Francisco. Their turquoise two-story home sits on a block of historic cottage houses with manicured gardens. Their house stands out in certain ways. For one thing, they've painted their garage doors with a black chalkboard paint and left the chalk outside so people in the neighborhood can draw on them. This is Amanda Kirby.
We've woken up in the morning and all of a sudden there's an alien or a spaceship or a giant cow that somebody left during the night. And most of these pictures are not signed. So we might have an idea of who did it, but it's always a neat mystery.
Next to the chalkboard is a life-size stencil of San Francisco Giants pitcher Brian Wilson. It's done in a graffiti style by a local artist named Getup. You can spot his work in alleyways and under highways. Amanda Kirby saw a similar piece on a building downtown. She contacted the artist, paid him a fee, and asked him to tag her home.
I think it was fun that our kids were able to see Getup outside with an assistant, you know, setting up his stencil and tagging and, you know, making it look perfect. So I'd love to see more art in the city that people can touch and experience and create themselves. I think that's one of the things that makes San Francisco so exciting and dynamic and lively and not so full of itself.
Throughout the winding streets of this quiet neighborhood, you'll find the same stencil of Brian Wilson spray painting the SF logo on the blank canvas of someone's home. One neighbor has even left instructions and a can of touch-up paint outside so the artist can come and tag at night. Nathan Kirby says the project is about creating so-called real street art without breaking the law.
In some respects, our little project of tagging our own little home is there's not a lot of risk in it, right? The cops weren't going to come and tell him to stop what you're doing, right? You know, it was invited. It was on a quiet street.
But just because one tag was invited doesn't mean others will be. Eli Rippert is a graffiti artist and activist at Presida Eyes, a community mural project in San Francisco's Mission District. He says it's great for artists like him to be paid for commissioned work, but there is a risk that people will get more graffiti than they wanted.
So if you want to go and put that on your house and you want someone to put that on your house, then there is a chance that someone else is going to come and put some real graffiti on top of that, you know? Especially if you want somebody, you're going to hire someone to come do it at night like they were doing illegally and have it just pop up, then and trying to give it the look of it actually being graffiti without it being graffiti and then not wanting the rest of graffiti to come out with it, you know what I'm saying? That's what comes with it, you know what I'm saying? So that's the battle that you have to fight with it too.
So far, no one's tagged the Kirby's house, but Nathan Kirby says he understands it's a possibility.
Because we asked for it, and they put it there, feels like we own it. You know, we own it, but it's not ours. And it's perfectly reasonable for somebody rationally to take it away from us.
And given the constantly evolving nature of most street art, that could happen any day. For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.
So what do you think of the spray-painted pieces that cover the city? Do you consider that graffiti art or vandalism? You can give us a call at 415-264-7106 and leave us a message. That number again is 415-264-7106. We'll try to get you on the air. In San Francisco's Mission District, the graffiti isn't just on the walls. It's in the neighborhood's heart. With its colorful wall murals, it's been called the largest concentration of public painting in the world, embodying culture, passion, and activism. Anise Jacoby is the editor of the book Street Art San Francisco Mission Muralismo. It's one of the few places you can see all the neighborhood's art in one place. She spoke with KALW's Hana Baba in this interview from our archives.
So let's talk about the book. What was the inspiration for the book?
The inspiration for the book came from Susan Cervantes, who is the director of Presida Eyes, and, of course, is a pioneer of working in community. But she became a leader in creating one of the three most dynamic centers of mural arts in the country, Presida Eyes. And she approached me about a decade ago and said, I'd like to do a book. And I suggested that it include all of the art in public in the Mission, which is extremely non-categorical in its styles. And she agreed, and we pursued, and we gathered, with the generosity of many, over 5,000 archival photos. We were only able to get 500 in the book, but it's an indication of the richness of the subject.
Yeah, but there was 5,000 that you managed to get a hold of.
Yeah, and I'm sure we only have some of the many fine offerings that have come and gone. It's a very ephemeral art form often, not always. Some things have a very long life and are painted with the intention of having a sense of permanence like the Women's Building, but many things are only up for a few hours.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the history of Mission murals. When did the neighborhood start to become this center for public art?
San Francisco itself has a very powerful tradition of working in public, and some of that was the influence of Diego Rivera and Miguel Covarrubias and the other great muralists from Mexico who worked here in the 30s. They painted the very famous mural that was done on Treasure Island that's now at City College. And in many ways, you could say the entire neighborhood are Frida and Diego's grandchildren, both with their political friskiness, their way in which they're on an art adventure, meaning that through art you can accomplish a lot that changes the way people see things. And that's very powerful.
What is it about the Mission, you think, that inspired this kind of art to flourish? Why the Mission specifically?
Well, the Mission has become an amazing laboratory of cultural activism, certainly, you know, in the last 50 years. It's a lot of years to account for, but if you look at that time period, it has been the home of some of the most significant political and cultural organizations, whether it's the Mime Troupe, Burlesque, Gasp Comics, or Intersection for the Arts, or the Roxy Theater, or other cinema. The list goes on in every single media that you have people with political instigation and a sense of creative fervor that cross-fertilizes and in a very authentically magnetic way both draws more creative people. It's also a cafe society, so there's a way in which that you scoff at excess and you dream together that nourishes ideas and the kind of transformation that the rest of the country is often hungry for, so it exports those ideas globally.
Anise Jacoby spoke with KALW's Hana Baba. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Buffy Almendares, Hana Baba, Julie Kane, RTM Kunahoffs, Audrey Dilling, Lupe Hernandez, Erica Mu, Emily Gaddick, Leela Day, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Isaac Silk, Taja Lanier, Angela Johnston, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is on the web at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio.
It was all a dream.
You're listening to the sounds of the Shotgun Wedding Quintet. They may be a jazz brass band, but they also have a hip-hop flavor. This week, you can hear them both outside and inside. On Thursday, they'll be at the Yerba Buena Gardens in San Francisco for the noontime concert. And then on Saturday, they're at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco, along with a KALW favorite, Quinn DeVoe. Doors open at 9 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Make my way to the kitchen, check the time on my watch. Not enough for some coffee, just a cup of the scotch. Getting ready for the day, charming men for a shave. Rusty razor cutting whiskers like grass by the blade. Not a dime for the bus when the sun...